talk to them a little bit later. Joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, it is an honor and a privilege to be talking to the man who wrote one of my favorite books, Loose Balls on the ABA, who also now has a new book coming out, which I believe is out, actually. I'm wrong there. The Browns Blues. He is Terry Pluto from Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. Terry, good morning to you, man.
You honor easily, but I'll take the praise. So.
Oh, first of all,
right, yes, the book is out.
Beautiful.
You know, it's in the stores, Amazon.com, TerryPluto.com. So there you go. And even tomorrow, then we'll be done with the plugs. I'll be signing books at the Learned Owl at 1 p.m. So on the Browns bye week, you can go pick up the Learned Owl in Hudson, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. I'll be signing books. So I appreciate the chance to plug in and really in connecting, so too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have sit here, and it seems like you have written the book that I have been asking for a long time, which is for somebody to sit down and just chronicle the mess starting in 99. Is that kind of the idea?
It is. I mean, it's like a three-pronged attack, as they would say. One would be, I have some emails and things from fans like, why are you still paying attention? Whose jersey do you still wear? Why do you care? Because that's a big part of this story, too, and it's one that they can only tell, not me, in their words. The second part is kind of what I would call the football wounded warriors. You know, Joe Thomas, Phil Dawson, Josh Gribbs, Tim Couch, Brady Quinn, you know, the guys that I think have really played with a lot of dignity here in the middle of this mess. And then the third is, you know, why all this stuff went wrong. And I felt almost like I was tackling the Civil War, because actually this has lasted longer than the Civil War. But I remember reading a thing, not to compare myself to Ken Burns, but he said you could just get lost in all this stuff that went on, and you know the old thing, you can't make it up, and the one thing leads to another to another. I mean, whether it's Randy Lerner firing Phil Savage on the cell phone in the airport. And actually, as that story goes on, Phil Savage is like, he shows up the game at Pittsburgh the next day, even though he's fired. Then the following day, he goes to Cleveland. He's trying to talk to Randy Lerner in person. And he won't talk to him. It was just nuts, crazy stuff.
I lived through a chunk of it, and every so often I'll sit around with my buddies and we'll just try to figure out what we remember and what we remember hearing. And then somebody will bring something up and we'll all look at each other and be like, oh my goodness, I can't even believe that happened. I completely forgot about, you know, X. You know,
yes.
It's just amazing. So I'm happy you chronologized it. Okay, I need to ask you currently, what did you think of John Dorsey's press conference to the media?
Well, if you remember how he was with the draft, I mean, he's not going to tell you much about not only who he's going to hire or, in a sense, who he's going to draft, but even how they're going to do it. He doesn't want you to know that. All these NFL guys, I mean, they think what they had for breakfast is a federal secret, so they're not going to tell you much. What I took from it, and I wrote about this for tomorrow, is he was more upset, I think, about all the losing earlier in the year than I realized at first. Because, if you know, he didn't get into eternal discord. He talked a lot about several times he mentioned winning, because I kind of went through the transcript, too, afterwards, and losing close games. I mean, at one point he said, this is, quote, it was great to see us put together a game plan, and I actually saw it on the field, quote, unquote.
That's a great point. And you know what the funny thing is I was sitting here listening to it. I didn't even realize it until you said it. I mean, I don't even know how to react to it. Terry, I'm speechless.
Right, and then another time he said, you know, well, it was about time we actually did the things the quarterback does well.
Whoo!
That might have been a bit of a fair paraphrase, but not much.
Yeah.
And, you know, then he talked about the lack of discipline. That was mentioned like three times. And attention to detail. And so, clearly, I mean, let's face it, this goes right back to Browns Blues or Browns history. You know, here's another failed shotgun marriage. This is whether it was Mike Pettine and Ray Farmer, or, you know, you go back to Eric Mangini and Mike Holmgren. You know, they're just all these guys patched together, try to make it work. And, I mean, it almost was as bad as Farmer and Patton, because those guys, other than to say hello, that was it. They'd never even talked before Jimmy Haslam fired Joe Banner and Lombardi and promoted Farmer and then hooked them up with Patton and said, okay, you guys got a big draft in a couple months. Have at it.
Yeah, and the crazy thing what came in there, I mean, there was so little communication and so little trust with those two guys that that's where you ended up with this whole texting to the sideline thing.
Sure you do. Exactly. That's the kind of thing you do. And then it's unrepairable. And now, in this sense, Dorsey at least came in with the cachet and the power that if Hugh Jackson failed, you know, he could ride that out easily and then hopefully move on to his own coach. But, you know, the refusal, I mean, the reason Dorsey was that, like when Dorsey was asked about, do you have to have control of your coach? You know, like basically which is the thing I think most of us prefer. The owner is number one, the GM's two, the coach is number three. He said not necessarily. That's because he came out of a system in Kansas City where they were kind of on the same wavelength, him and same length, and also same wavelength with Andy Reid. So if it's a guy who really works well with, that's fine. He doesn't mind that. You know, Reid let Dorsey kind of bring in the players, and Reid did the strategy, and then the owner got mad when he told Dorsey to win right away. Dorsey jacked up the salary cap. They won right away, and he said he spends too much money. Well, you got what you pay for, though. You got some good stuff.
Yeah, and they're looking at it right now as that offense is no top five easily in the NFL, and the defense seems to be coming around with D Ford as well. I mean, they're not a bad team. In fact, I think Vegas has them as the favorite to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl.
I mean, that could be. If you look at Dorsey's made three significant quarterback moves in like the last 6 years or whatever. The first was trading for Alex Smith, which worked out. The second was, you know, drafting Patrick Mahomes. And now everybody, of course, is taking credit for that. And then the third is Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
And none of those, I mean, I guess you could say Smith was kind of a smart choice, but I mean, I didn't like Mahomes. I didn't. And a lot of other people didn't like Mahomes. That was not easy. And not that many people other than the analytics crowd, which is the real irony of ironies, you know, love Baker Mayfield. So that's, you know, that's surprising there. And by the way, Dorsey does use analytics. He isn't married to it. But I've always thought, like, the GM drives the bus. And then behind them are the two seats. In one seat are like your scouting, your regular football people, and the other seat are your analytics. And you kind of go between, you know, take the best of both. And I think that's how Dorsey does it.
Right. It's a tool in the toolbox.
Yeah, it's a significant tool.
Yeah. It's like basically, I compared it to this. It's like basically saying that I am only going to use flathead screws. Mm-hmm. I refuse to even acknowledge the Phillips head screwdriver. That doesn't exist. We are only going to use flathead screws here.
Well, I mean, I remember talking to, and I use this in my book too, it was a casual conversation with Paul DePodesta, and it went back to looking back at the 2014 draft, where when Joe Banner left, and this is all in my book, was fired, Johnny Manziel was already off their draft board. They kicked him off. And as Banner told me, the analytics was terrible on him, and we knew everything about him, quote-unquote, I mean everything, you know, all his personal problems. And later on, DePodesta, of course, you know, then Jimmy stuck his nose in there. Basically, now when he talked to everybody, it was the homeless guy that drafted Johnny Manziel, because nobody else was taking credit for it.
Wonderful.
But DePodesta said sometimes what the analytics will be good for is to tell you what not to do. In other words, they'll say, you know, the last eight guys that came out, like, with this profile, you know, seven were dismal failures, and one worked out. Now, if you want to play that card, go ahead. But we're just telling you. And that's kind of how the analytics was on Manziel, because he was so small, bolted out of the pocket, you know, played in a garbage system in terms of how they prepare you for the NFL. You know, if you want to go ahead and do that, and he had injuries in college, where he often, this came from the football side, didn't practice much during the week because he was so beat up because he ran so much. And we didn't even get into the personal stuff. So if you want to go ahead and take him, go ahead, but the odds are against you. And I thought that was interesting because that is where analytics makes some sense. It's like, you know, don't do this. It's not probably not going to work out. And then, you know, you could debate on which analytics likes what's this or that. So, again, like you said, it's in the toolbox and it matters.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Terry Peluto joins us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. All right, Terry, I'm putting you in the general manager seat right here, okay? Mm-hmm. You are allowed to take this back. This is not going to be written in stone. If you were to make a head coaching hire, who would be your guy?
Right now. Can I have John Harbaugh being fired?
Yes. You have John Harbaugh being fired.
Probably John Harbaugh.
Okay.
I don't know him well, but we have to look at the special teams coach from Kansas City, too.
Dave Tobe.
I think that a lot of times special teams coaches, if you have guts enough to do it, can become pretty good head coaches because they have to really patch things together and, you know, deal with personalities of their of the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, and their head coach. And so there's, I think there's a lot to be said for that, you know, and that assumes Harbaugh isn't burned out, that kind of thing. But I think he would make sense here. I really believe that Dorsey will go for some NFL type. I would be shocked if it's Matt Campbell or you know. I mean, by the way, hire Lincoln Riley simply because he coached Baker Mayfield. He's barely coached a couple years in college as a head coach. Really? You want to do that?
Yeah, that's kind of my thought, too. It's like,
yeah, and then you kind of create the, well, that's, he's the quarterback's boy and all that. Ooh, you know?
Yeah. He just seems a little too green, and then you run into the situation like the Giants ran into with Ben McAdoo,
mm-hmm.
where they picked McAdoo because Eli and Odell Beckham loved him so much. Well, guess who's unemployed?
Yeah, right. You have to be. And I just think that this is a tough job. If you look at the quarterbacks that – I mean, I'm sorry, the coaches that Dorsey worked with, you know, one was Andy Reid, another was Mike McCarthy. And even go back to his first coach when he's a scout was Mike Holmgren. He's mentioned Coach Holmgren a couple times in passing in press conferences. You know, these are the sort of NFL creatures, you know. They came up through the system and that. And I just think that's where he'll go with this because part of the reason I think when they did go with Greg Williams just because Greg Williams had been around.
Yeah.
And that gave him a certain comfort level.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He is Terry Pluto. All right, Terry, I have to ask you because I've been hooked on this doc. What was it like recording Basketball Love Story? I know I'm going totally left field on
no,
you
that's
here, but.
Okay. If the thing, I think it was like 2013 or 14. That's what I'm trying to remember when it was. It was so long ago. By the way, that was like even bigger than trying to do the Civil War, what they ended up doing with that, because I had no clue of the scope. I remember it was kind of neat. They were at the Ritz-Carlton downtown, and, you know, they stuck you in this room, and you're sitting there at this table. It's almost like you're being interrogated, and they're asking you questions. They had copies of my book, Loose Balls, and they were talking a lot there. And they were a couple of these guys. And one was, I think, Dan Kloss, who's like the producer. These guys were really prepared, and just talked for 2.5 hours. I don't remember what it was, it's riveting to me. If you love basketball, it's amazing. And then all the footage they got and things, you know, they found stuff on the ABA that I didn't find. And it's just been great. That's one of the things I'm like honored to be part of, was that to have my voice there. But because it was so long ago, I don't remember much other than, once in a while, I've done some of those other things where you could tell the person hadn't been very prepared, and the taping. These guys, they had it all lined up. That's what I remember.
Well, I remembered reading for Dan Kloss that this really was a brainchild of his, that he wanted to build the Ken Burns baseball version of mm-hmm. basketball. And so I immediately was like, okay, I've got to get into this because the story of the NBA and the story of the ABA and basketball in general is just so fascinating to begin with. And I loved Loose Balls. I'm a huge ABA fan because it just always blew me away how much of a mess it was. Like,
yeah, it really was nothing. They were kind of the original startups. I did a book called Tall Tales, the NBA of the 50s and 60s, done the same way. It came out after Loose Balls did not sell nearly as well or whatever. But that is fascinating, too, going back to like how the league got integrated. And they dealt with a lot of the stuff there. A lot of the people that were interviewed for that book, I talked to. And like one of the interesting things that came out of my thing there was, from a distance, it always used to be Bill Russell was the good guy and Wilt was sort of the jerk and all that. But
yeah.
When you talk to people from that era, unless you were talking to the Celtics. Now, the Celtics all loved Russell. But the guys on the other team, they all loved Wilt. And an example would be, now, Wilt was braggadocious, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, Russell would call rookies not by their name. Rook, hardly ever talked to him or hardly ever took him out. Wilt Chamberlain took everybody out, bought him dinner, bought him drinks, and told him, well, you know, then you got the world according to Wilt. But he was just much more engaging. And when I interviewed him, he talked to me for a couple of hours. And I had two things with him over the years, and he was always, I mean, it is the world according to Wilt. You'll like this line. So I said to Wilt, I said, well, why do you think Russell is so angry about things? He said, well, just imagine. You're Bill Russell, and you got all these championship rings, and you're walking through an airport, and a guy walks up to you and says, how you doing, Will? And
That's fantastic.
And you know what? Nobody ever mistook me for Bill Russell.
Nope, not at all. That's what happens when you're 7-1 in
you're
the 7-1,
60s. Yeah, when you are this presence.
Exactly. Terry, this is an honor and a privilege. Thank you so much for joining me, man. You can catch the book. It is the Browns Blues. You can get it at any bookstore you'd like, Amazon Prime or Amazon.com, booksellers all over. And where are you signing books, Terry?
Okay, Sunday, 1 p.m. at Learned Owl Books in Hudson, Main Street in Hudson, from 1 to 2 in Hudson. And I will be there, and hopefully some fans will be too. There's no Browns game. So,
thank you so much for joining me, man.
This was awesome. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
Terry Pluto from Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer. I could talk hoops with that guy until I'm blue in the face.